It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 609 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, Jay Magnum from Astral Vengeance is back, and he's the creative force behind that series of original graphic novels, and he's offering the latest chapters in Astral Vengeance on Kickstarter, which is going to conclude soon. It's described this way. Issues 1 through 3 of the cool revenge tale in the highly acclaimed Astral series. Also available, the full Astral Trilogy Saga, 333 pages. As usual, we also delve into the comics industry, always a fun discussion with Jay. Be sure to support Jay's High Octane Comics as soon as you listen to this interview. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
What would happen if Earth was attacked by aliens called Astrals, but there were no superheroes to stop them? Well, that's what Astral is all about. But now it's time for vengeance. Astral Vengeance.
It's always good to talk to Jay Magnum, one of the creators of the Astral series of graphic novels and stuff, and has the Astral Trilogy out, in fact. And Astral Vengeance, issues 1 to 3, sci-fi action horror thriller, is going on right now. How's it going, Jay?
Hey, it's going great, Wayne. Happy to be here. How are you doing?
Good, good. Now, we're recording this a little early, so campaign is underway, and you're doing really well. And let's do the things that people always get mad that I don't do soon enough right away.
Sure.
This project will be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 12th at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. But based on your previous successes, I have a feeling that's not going to be a problem. So that'll be good. So let's see here. It's the highly anticipated fourth adventure in the critically acclaimed Astral series. Action, sci-fi, and humor blend in this high-octane adventure about a disgraced ex-astronaut who must assemble a ragtag team of misfits, including one of the enemy. And how is that pronounced again? Lila?
Well, Lila.
Lila, okay. Right. To stop a devastating attack on Earth by a malevolent extraterrestrials called Astrals. And so let's see. What's good for people to know right off the bat? What should they know about Astral?
Well, I mean, it's such an open-ended question. So the first thing I usually tell people is that Astral is high-octane sci-fi action-adventure. So if you're into sci-fi, if you're into action-adventure, you'll be pretty happy with the series.
Okay. And as we've said, you've got three completed volumes out, and this is the third issue of the fourth. So there's lots of good reading to be had there. In fact, you can pick up the trilogy as part of Astral Vengeance issue number 3. Or it says 1 to 3 on the top, but that's what everybody mm-hmm. does these days. They put all three of them on there.
Right.
So why don't you talk about what's going on in the fourth volume that people have an idea what's happening?
Sure, sure. So just to take a quick step back, you're right about there's a lot of pages. So the first three volumes plus the first three comic books of the Vengeance adventure were clocking in at a pretty round number, 400 pages total. So
wow.
If you're new to the series and you pick up the whole thing, that's 400 pages of comic book reading. So it'll take you a while to crunch your way through that.
Well, that's good reading, though. The thing is, I really enjoyed it. You know, I never tell people it takes, because if it's a good reading, I will dive in and I won't realize how long I've been in that other world, that alternate universe, when I'm doing it. So your books, all of them, grab a hold of me, and I forget what time it is and how long I'm in there, because it's so gripping and so well told. So I don't worry about how long it's going to take you. You won't even notice, at least, and that's what happened with me. So I think that's good stuff going all around. So so it's called Astral Vengeance. Why is it called Astral Vengeance?
Well, there's a couple of dynamics in play. So for the fourth adventure, we're bringing back a villain that was last seen in the first volume, Astral Genesis. And he would like to get vengeance against our heroes. And then at the same time, the Astrals themselves, and there's a subclass of Astral in the books called the Architects, they also want to get vengeance against Lila because, as you know, Wayne, because you've read the series, Lila is an Astral. She's sort of an ex-Astral that's turned against them. So there's a lot of vengeance dynamics here, you know, in play.
Okay, that's lots of good stuff going on. Lots of action and stuff like that happening. I recently started watching a show on Max called Warrior. It's based on Bruce Lee's writings and stuff like that. And the reason I started to watch it was because it promised a lot of action and martial arts and stuff like that. I'm not all that much into martial arts, but I really like the action adventure type stuff. And I have been gripped in that show. I really like it. Only 3 seasons of it, though. That's not the bad news. But yours, the good news, we're in the 4th season, basically, of yours. So that's there's crazy. lots of good stuff to go on with that. And it's just so much fun to read, and lots of adventure, and that's a word I don't say so much in comics anymore. And lots of time there's people talking. I'll turn a page, and there'll be dialogues, just thick words all over the place, very little drawing. And I go, well, I don't have to read that page, and I just flip over and go on because eventually they'll catch me up on all that stuff. But I like the action and adventure that you guys do because it's, you know, if there's time to explain something, you don't spend a lot of time doing it, but you do just enough so that we know what's going on and then we move forward. And I think that's one of the great things about your series of books.
Well, thank you, Wayne. I really appreciate that. And I know the entire team of creators that I work with on the book appreciate hearing that as well. And also want to take a couple of minutes here to thank you. Because I don't think we've talked since you had actually done like a video review on your YouTube channel of the Astral books. And I never really had a chance to thank you for that because it was a very positive review and I enjoyed watching that. And I would encourage your listeners here to go check out that video review on YouTube of Astral because you say a lot more there. And I mean, there's a lot more detailed about what you liked about it. And I personally enjoyed hearing it. So thank you for that.
Well, the thing I like to do is that's the highest score I've ever given a comic. So I want to point that out. So, and I've reviewed some really great books, I thought, but there's always something that kind of makes me go, I can't really score on that one very well. But yours is very professional on all levels. And it just works for me. I, as you and I have talked about before, I love female characters, particularly lead ones. And Lila is one of my very favorites in that particular genre, a particular group of people. And so I really like the way that she is carried on and stuff. It's just that adventure business just gets me every time because I'm not so much for melodrama and I'm not so much. Some people like soap operas and stuff. I love to hear people argue and disagree and stuff like that. That drives me up the wall screaming. I can't take that stuff. I want a story. I want adventure. I want things to happen. I want things to move forward. And your books always do that so well. Now, and not only is the writing really crisp and sharp, but the art always really does super well too. I put my head in there. It was like Frank Miller talked about the first time he read a Batman comic. He opened the book and he fell in. Your books do that to me too. I fall into the book and I don't know what time it is and I don't know how long I've been there, but I've enjoyed my time in the astral universe. So it's just great stuff.
Well, terrific. Yeah, that's what we call a high level of immersion. You immerse yourself. It immerses you in the adventure. And actually, it's kind of funny because that's a little bit by necessity because we have so much going on. There's so many dynamics that we have a limited amount of pages to do it in. So we have to keep things moving along briskly. So I'm glad that people appreciate that. It's more of a necessity, though.
I see, what's interesting, this is one of the problems that comics have fighting against, like video games and stuff like that. Video games are things are constantly going on. There's very little in the way of dialogue happening. There's all this stuff going on, shooting and jumping and running and all that stuff. And so for me, I want a story that is just the right balance. just enough character to make me care about the characters, but also just enough action and adventure to make me go, now what, now what, now what? And that's where your books, I think, really shine. I think that's really great stuff.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks. It's great to hear that feedback, you know. And that's one thing is I always ask the people that, you know, obtain my books, whether it's at like a show, a comic convention, or through Kickstarter or Indiegogo or any of the mail order channels or anything like that. I always ask for feedback, and I always enjoy hearing feedback from Astro readers, Astro fans. And so, again, not sure how many Astro fans are listening to the podcast. Hopefully a lot. Maybe we can promote that. But I mean, I'll say that again here to the listeners. If you have read Astro, you're going to pick it up and read it. I personally love hearing from friends and fans that have read the series and getting that feedback. Sort of like the video games, I like to be more interactive, especially with people. So,
now, how do people give you feedback, though? What's the best way to get feedback to you?
Oh, well, you know, it all depends. I get feedback through a whole bunch of channels. You know, again, like I said, at the shows, at the conventions, people will come up to the table and say, hey, I saw your stuff, or I have your stuff, I've read it. Can you sign these things I bought, you know? So one of them is in person at the shows and conventions. And then another is just, you know, by email. Just email you, other people find me through these other social media channels like Twitter or Facebook. Well, it's not Twitter anymore. I guess it's X now. But the social media site formerly known as Twitter.
The mutant.
X site. Or like Facebook, they'll message me or post. So it's all kind of different directions it comes from. It's really it's the communication channel that whoever the person is most comfortable with. It's not hard to find me. I don't make myself difficult to reach because I like that interaction.
Now, you mentioned something. I don't want to get off the subject too far, but are you going to conventions now at this point?
Yeah. I've kept up maybe not as many this year as in previous years, but a pretty regular schedule this year so far, yeah.
If people want to know where you are, what conventions you're doing, where did they find that out?
Best part is just go to the website, pepperonentertainment.com or astrographicnovel.com. It redirects to the same place. And on the main menu, there's a menu at the top with an appearances menu item. You click on that, and that'll tell you my convention schedule coming up. So that's how you can find me.
Okay. Now, on the Kickstarter page, there's something. I know who Lila is. She's got the purple hair.
Right.
But there's a picture of a cover A for issue number 3, and it's got 3 women on it.
Right.
Lila's the one on the right with the purple hair. Who are the other 2 women? Why don't you mention?
So the blonde in the middle holding the Eclipse rifle, which is one of our fictional particle weapons in the series. Her name is Jeannie. It's sort of a nickname. Her full name is Regina Lewis. And she is an ex-girlfriend of the lead of the series, John Devane, the ex-astronaut that we talked about before. So that's Jeannie. And then the blue-haired girl to her right, which would be our left, that's her daughter, Angelica. And Angelica, the way I wrote the 2 characters is kind of funny because they're related, you know, their mother, daughter. Jeannie is sort of the archetype of sort of like the straight man. You know, she's sort of the typical obeys all the rules and, you know, colors within the lines, that kind of thing. She's kind of the straight person. And Angelica, her daughter, is the exact opposite of that. So she's like, you know, the rebel without a cause kind of thing. And you can kind of tell that the way she's drawn. But then we also did something to make the interactions between mother-daughter a little more interesting in that Angelica is, she can't hear and she can't speak. So they have to use sign language. And Angelica in the series, she can read lips so she can understand what people are saying. But that's actually something that we're going to get to in this 3rd adventure. So something's going to change there. We're going to change that dynamic a little bit. And that's something that I think readers are going to find very interesting that, you know, we had this method of communication before between the two, and now we're going to change that up a little bit. And it's also interesting thing about Angelica that we did not actually start off the series in Astral Genesis. Angelica's not in it. The other characters, Jeannie, Lila, John Devane, Rob, the Russian hacker, they're all in it. Angelica in Astral Genesis, if you go back and take a look, she's only seen in photographs, and the photographs only in Jeannie's house, right? Because you'd have pictures of your daughter and if you're a mommy. Mm-hmm. And the pictures are of a little girl who looks completely different. So in the photos, she's blonde haired and, you know, looks kind of normal. And then when we actually meet Angelica in the second graphic novel, Astro Evolution, she looks the way she does on this cover. So it kind of make that it's sort of a juxtaposition. They're sort of opposites. And then remember in Astro Alliance, there's a scene where it's sort of Jeannie's dreaming, or it's sort of like a sequence where her mind is making up what would an idyllic life be for her, you know. And she imagines Angelica to be the same age. She's not a little girl anymore. She's the same age. She's like a tween or 13, 14, whatever. But she looks like in those photographs. So she's blonde haired and looks kind of like a normal child. So there's kind of the way Jeannie sees Angelica, and then there's the way Angelica really is. So it's a really neat dynamic to explore, and we're going to get into that. That's one of the fun things that we're going to do in this third issue that's being kickstarted, is we're going to change up things a little bit, and the relationship between them is going to change.
Okay. Now, I got to ask, above that picture is another picture, which is obviously them in a car. Do you want to talk about that? Because
sure.
It's kind of funny. I mean, there is Lila sitting there, and she's kind of unhappy about the reactions of the two in the front seat. But she looks like, is she sitting next to the monster in there? What's going on in there?
So I think that's a panel that I pulled from the end of issue one, beginning of issue two. So it was in there somewhere. And this monster that you're seeing there, within the series, they call him, they refer to him as the Shade. He doesn't really have a name. He's an astral wraith. So there's different classes of astrals. And so if we take a quick sidebar and say, what are astrals? Well, we talked about the architects being like a sub-branch of the astrals. And so these wraiths are also another sub-branch. And as many aliens as you can think of, you know, would be in the galaxy, there can be that many sub-branches of astral. Because what they do is they capture these species, and then they merge them and meld them with astral DNA. And you get, you know, a hybrid that's whatever the species was with astral DNA in it. That's what Lila is. Lila is astral human hybrid, right? So that's kind of what this monster is. He's a wraith astral hybrid. Anyway, so he's normally evil, but in this case, again, with the storyline, they're sort of working together a little bit. They have a common enemy. So he's sort of a frenemy, I guess, is the term they use. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Shades, what they can do, one of their astral abilities is they can teleport between shadows. So I think in this panel that you're looking at right there, I believe within the context of the story that they were searching for Jeannie for a reason that's a plot point of the story, and they had popped into the back seat of her car and they're waiting for her, and then Angelica and Jeannie had been at this gathering or whatever it was, and so they're getting back into their car to drive home, and these two pop into the back seat and scare the bejesus out of them. So I mean, it's the reactions I think you're seeing.
Right, right. So funny stuff. I think that's really well done. That's,
I love
good
those
stuff.
Beats. Yeah,
that was great stuff. To that. Now, there's a couple things I thought I want to talk with you about, because there's just some things on the Kickstarter page that makes me very interested. There's a sentence that talks about AI.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I find that's probably a topic that a lot of people are interested in these days. Why don't you talk about what you say about AI and your opinion of it?
Yeah, okay. No problem there. It has become, and I think it was, it's a growing issue within the creator community. And I mean, I think it's part of the broader picture, right? So you have AI working its way, or trying to work its way, into different facets of entertainment creation. So we're talking about, you know, movies, potentially, digital effects in movies could be done potentially with AI. AI could create digital characters, which could, I'm using air quotes here, you know, act in a movie. And AI can, again, I'm using air quotes, compose music in some cases. We're not really sure what that is. So the way I understand it, what AI does is it looks at the aggregate of the topic out there, whether it's music, TV, comics, paintings, whatever it happens to be. And it aggregates all this stuff that's out there that it can get its hands on, presumably on the internet. And then it uses an amalgamation of that stuff and whatever the, you know, parameters that a programmer or a user could input, and then spits out, you know, a quote unquote air quote creation, right? So what they say is, you know, what I've heard that the line on it, you know, that I understand is that AI creation is only as good as, you know, what it has access to, right? It's got to learn about whatever topic it's trying to produce a product on, right? So whatever it's got access to, that's all it knows about. And it can't think for itself, at least not yet. That's not quite where we are. So what you're doing, the way I understand it, is AI is amalgamating and then making certain decisions. I can't really say creative decisions, but in our space, it would be creative decisions on colors to use or musical notes to play, that kind of thing, when it spits out whatever output it's supposed to create, right? So that's the basis of how I understand it. I'm not a philosopher. This gets into philosophy. What are the next 3, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 years going to look like with AI? AI is probably only going to get better at what it's doing right now. But so more to your point, zeroing in, narrowing in on the question you've asked, how does it pertain specifically, you know, to comics? And what's the beat out there right now in terms of comic creators and what are their feelings? So from what I've seen, comic creators, human ones anyway, don't care much for AI. I'm not exactly sure what the reasons are. I think it might have something to do with, you know, just like when automation machines replaced factory workers, making cars, you know, that kind of thing, robotics. There's maybe a certain fear of displacement by AI, but there's also, I think, at the same time, perhaps a belief that AI can't think for itself, and, you know, humans can think for themselves, and so human-made product is always going to be better than an AI-made product. And the fact that AI has to source from what's already out there, and right now it's presumably sourcing from mostly human facets, there's a certain maybe understanding, and I'm just kind of trying to read other people, what other people are thinking, other creators, is that AI is, I don't know, stealing? It's definitely referencing, you know, other works that done by other human creators to then aggregate and make its own product, and they're not too happy with that. But regardless of any of that, regardless of what anyone's beliefs about AI are, what we see is the platforms out there like Kickstarter, for example, there's a big push to GMO in foods, right? I mean, you know, what's genetically modified, what's natural. And so I think it's the same kind of thing happening here. And so they want to label for more probably for the consumer. So, you know what you're buying or you know what you're backing or pledging that, you know, this project incorporated certain elements of AI, this other one didn't. And so that consumer or that backer can make an informed decision when they pledge for a particular project. And so the last part of that question was about me specifically. And I keep an open mind. I'm not sure where it's all headed, but right now I'm choosing not to use AI in any facet of any astral production. And that's that line on there that you see that's on the Kickstarter page. So I've identified this project, and I will continue to identify my Kickstarter projects and other crowdfunders going forward will not use AI. And if that changes at any point, I will let people know. But it's also important to know that none of the projects I've crowdfunded in the past, none of them that I've ever created in the past, have used AI. So just to make that clear.
Mm-hmm. It brings up a topic that I'm interested in, too, is that I'm a big fan of Karen Carpenter as a singer. And she, because she died at the age of 32, and, you know, I always wondered what would it sound like if she got to sing other songs besides what she got to. And on YouTube, I came across somebody who has AI and is literally using AI to put her voice into songs she never sang. And as a fan, there's only one song that really sounds natural to me. There's a Christmas song that Richard wrote after she passed, and he did it. He performed in Japan. And somebody took her voice and put it in there using AI, and it actually sounds like her. Mm-hmm. Now, other ones, I mean, I've listened to a whole bunch of other ones, songs I know she never had any experience singing, and it doesn't sound real to me. It sounds like she's going from the center of the note to the center of the note to the center of the note. And anybody who knows anything about singing, there's movement within the note. There's a top and bottom of the range around the note. And then a human person doesn't always hit right in the center every time. It moves around in there. And sure. So I've listened to them, and they don't sound like her, even though the tone of the voice sounds like her. And maybe they'll come when it knows how to do that. But that one Christmas song I like. But the rest of it, every time I listen to it, I just kind of shake my head and go, no, that doesn't sound like her. Mm-mm.
You're so. Talking about the minute imperfections that are unique to when humans produce music or art. You know, there's tiny imperfections that maybe subconsciously we pick up on and are able to identify and say, well, that sounds natural. That's what we label as natural. Mm-hmm. And so when it's too lined up and those imperfections don't exist, we sense that there's something wrong. That's what they're talking about, this whole thing with the recent Indiana Jones, and they de-aged him, and it's mm-hmm. called Uncanny Valley, that kind of thing. You're just not comfortable with it. I think that's what you're talking about, Wayne.
Yeah. And it just doesn't work for me. I mean, I understand the financial bit. You get the computer to do it. It's cheaper than hiring a person. You know, it can spit out articles for you. It can spit, because people always tell me, like even when doing in the podcast, I should be using AI on the podcast. And I always go, well, where would I do it? What would I do? Because to me, I don't. What they do is they have programs they'll go through and take out the uhs and ahs and, and stuff like that.
Probably sounds unnatural too.
Well, the thing that gets me is I've had people tell me that they want the uhs and ahs in there because that sounds like a natural conversation then.
The natural voice patterns.
Because I used to spend hours taking the uhs and ahs out. And people told me, you know, it doesn't sound like me when you do that. I wish you'd leave those in there. And so I don't – I will on occasion. If it gets distracting, I'll take it out. But most of the time, I don't do that. And so I – see, the thing of it is when it comes to, like, writing and artwork and stuff like that, I can't imagine how a computer is going to do things – Like for example, the drawings that you have on your Kickstarter page. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine a computer getting the nuance onto those characters and making them, you know, bounce off the page, you know, or spring off the page like that. I just can't see that. So, and you know, of course, maybe it's just because I haven't experienced enough of it, but I'm just, at this point, I'm kind of like, if somebody uses AI, I tend to be really skeptical. Maybe that's a good word for it. Of it, I don't want to. So I'm glad to hear you doing that, because I think that your book is going to continue to sparkle as a result of doing that kind of stuff. So I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, there's a certain inevitability to AI. The only question is, you know, where does it work best? I mean, maybe it works best to supplement, you know. I don't know. I mean, again, we're not philosophers, at least I'm not. So, you know, we're not going to solve those things here. Because, I mean, we're still talking 3, 5, 10, 50, 100 years. So something's going to happen. It's going to find a balance, you know, somewhere. But at this point, I think it's just good for people to know, you know, where it's being used and in what projects. And at this point, you know, I don't have any plans now or in the future to use it. But, you know, you never know. We have to see where it goes. And you're absolutely right about, you know, especially with, you know, dead actors. I mean, we talked about, you know, like in Rogue One, they had some characters that were recreated there digitally. And, you know, you get into if the actor is dead, you know, would their estate have to approve? I mean, you get into all sorts of philosophical questions. What would the person have wanted, right? I mean, because mm-hmm. they're not here to make that decision. If somebody would say to me, hey, Jay, you know, after you die, can we use your likeness to do this? And then, you know, I'm not sure I'd be comfortable with that. I mean, I can't rule it out. I mean, it depends on the context. So mm-hmm. does that mean we have to start writing that kind of stuff into our wills? I don't know. But I mean, I think things are going to change. But again, this is not a philosophy podcast, right? It's a comics podcast. So fortunately, we don't have to get into that, right?
Well, one last thing on the subject. Do you ever read American Flag by Howie Chaykin?
I have seen it. I have read bits and pieces, but I have not read any substantial amount of it. But yeah, I'm aware of what it is for sure.
Well, the AI, believe it or not, back in like the 80s when this was written, Howie Chaykin understood that eventually this was going to be a thing. The main character who's on the police force was originally an actor, but they filmed him so much and they had so much footage of him that the computer took over the part and he couldn't act anymore because the computer was doing his role. So he ended up being a police officer as a result of that.
Yeah, it's sort of like we get back to the recent Indiana Jones. There's so much footage of young Harrison Ford done 30, 40 years ago that the computers can study it and render it. And wasn't that that was a subject of a movie that came out maybe 10 or 15 years ago, maybe longer than that, called Surrogates. Remember that one? Mm-hmm. Bruce Willis was in that one. Mm-hmm. And so they actually sat at home and looked kind of bad or old or whatever, but their physical representations that were interacting with each other out there in the real world were like androids or something, but controlled by them. So like physical real world avatars, and they kind of looked like them, but like idealized versions of them, handsome, young, kind of thing. And so you wonder, you know, if it's going to be something similar to that.
Well, let's change a little bit the subject here. I see that you now have trading cards available in the Astral. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that, because I don't remember that being in previous ones. Maybe I just didn't notice it before.
Yeah, I mean, we've had them. We've had those since the first one, since Genesis. I made trading cards and had sets coming out for each of the graphic novels to kind of go along with the graphic novels. So it was like I'm trying to think. It was a set of, how many? I want to say it was a set of like 12 per graphic novel. It was like a set of 12 for Genesis, or maybe it was more than that. I think it was 18. Actually, I think it was 18, 12, and 12. I think it's the way I did it. So there's like a total of 36 cards or something like that are out there for all three volumes. And so when we get done with Vengeance, which has two more issues to go, I might do another set of trading cards for Vengeance. But it's just got the characters on it, little bios on the back. I mean, you can see it obviously on the Kickstarter page. I got a couple of sets for sale. And some of those cards were exclusive to Kickstarter. Like there was always an exclusive Kickstarter card for each of the three Genesis, Evolution, and Alliance graphic novels. But it was just fun, man. It was just a fun thing, and just kind of hey, let's have some fun. And so it's got, you know, their little bio on the back and, you know, little stats for them, and try to get people to get to know the characters and a little bit of awareness. And, you know, I can use them at the conventions, and I can kind of show them off. People think they're neat, you know, and I can, it's really kind of a good way. It's a conversation piece. You get a conversation going, who's that? They can see their faces, you know, on the cards without having to crack a book. And so all the characters are there. And I, you know, if they see a character they like, which sometimes they do, they'll buy the card, or I can at least tell them about it. And it's sort of a conversation starter, but just had a lot of fun making them. And, you know, there's only so many characters you can realistically do before you start to get to really obscure ones. You get, because you got 36 cards. So there's a few that are repeating, but I mean, some of the characters have dynamic changes between the books. So like there's a couple of different Lila cards where her stats are kind of the same, but her appearance is a little different, and you know, she's grown a little bit, so her bio is a little different and stuff like that. And you know, Lila over the different volumes has had a couple of clones, so I think we have some of the clones in there, so it looks like Lila, but it's not. It's like an evil clone or whatever. And then of course you got the main cast and the supporting cast and the Astrals, and just, you know, neat stuff. I just enjoy doing it, and it's a lot of fun. So I'd highly recommend picking them up, because I only have two full sets left that still have some of those exclusive cards in them.
Cool. Wow. Now, I noticed something else that you're doing this time. Maybe I just didn't notice it before because it's out of my price range. But there's a $699 level. Mm-hmm. You get to be an associate producer and get a credit on the first page. Mm-hmm. Ever wanted to be a producer on a professional award-winning comic series? Well, this is the real deal. You'll be credited as an associate producer along with the rest of the Astral team on the first page credits of the Astro Vengeance issue number 2, including all comic book media types.
No, I gotta fix it. Should say 3.
So that's what I was going to say. There should be 3.
That's a typo. I'll get in there.
It won't be that way by the time this
I'll have it fixed. Yeah.
But it's only available a limited quantity of 2. Mm-hmm. And as we're talking, nobody's claimed that yet because it's early in the campaign when we're recording this.
The day ain't over yet. We're still on launch.
Have you done that before? Have I just not noticed it?
Trying to remember. I think I did it before on the last one. I can't remember if I did it on the first one or not. Maybe a couple of times before it's been offered.
Okay, because there's another one at the $1,399 level, right. 57 book mega collection and producer credit. So you mm-hmm. get even more. I mean, has anybody taken? No, nobody's taken that yet, but the day is young. So there's all kinds of good things. I like it when people do that. Have you ever done the thing where you draw people? People get drawn into the book.
We have not, and that's only because in a lot of the cases for the previous books, the artwork was pretty well locked in, so there wasn't really an opportunity to do it. And some say, well, you can do it on a future book, or I guess we can, but you know, the books don't always necessarily come out on a regular schedule, so it kind of gets to be a pain in the butt to do it like that. So no, we haven't really offered anything like that. And, I mean, I've seen other people doing it, but I have not ever offered that for the Astro books. And of course, the other piece of that is you have to find a way to, you know, there's got to be a situation to draw the person in. And it's like, well, you know, you can draw them in as part of a crowd or something. But, you know, to me, is that really special? Oh, big deal. There's a tiny little face back there that looks maybe a little bit like that photograph. I don't know. For me, you just don't get the bang for the buck out of it, that kind of stuff. I mean, if it could be like a major character, some could offer that. But, you know, we have our narratives. There's really not a way to fit a backer in as a major or even a supporting character. It just doesn't work because the stories are already kind of there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always tell the story. I did do that one time. It was a book that has zombie Moby Dick in it. And you could be one of the – and there was a ship of zombies that was chasing after the original ship. It was also after the zombie Moby Dick. And you could get drawn in as one of the characters. Mm-hmm. And it was actually something I could afford. So I actually got in there. But the bad news was I couldn't find myself.
Yeah.
Now, the pictures of me, of course, you know, this was back – people from centuries ago. So they took my glasses off, and so I didn't recognize I was in there. And the creator pointed it out and said, oh, there I am. Okay, now I see me because I don't have my glasses on because, you know, back in the 1500s and stuff, not many people had glasses, so they took it off. But it's kind of cool, though, still to have my image in a comic book, so I'm happy with that.
Sure.
But not everybody wants to do it. But I did want to ask one other thing about the foil, because foil, a lot of people really are getting into foil mm-hmm. these days. Are you finding, let's see, there's a foil, it's $79. Again, it's early in the campaign, so it hasn't really been snapped up yet. But I bet you by the time this posts, it will be.
Well, there's and those five are five. They're sets, too. So it's like $80. It's a set of 2. I think those are sets. Pretty sure they're set. They're not singles.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a little bit better deal. I've seen people selling them, you know, for whatever, 60, 80, 100, and it's one book. So, I mean, in my case, I think it's a pretty good deal because you're getting 2 of them. But, yeah, we've offered foils. I think I started offering foils on the first Vengeance. So first, second, and third issues have both had foils offered. And they came out looking pretty good. I mean, I liked them. People seem to like them. The metal covers, I haven't offered any of that yet. I'm checking into that. But metal versus foil, there's a high production cost on that. I mean, it's like you're going to spend like $10+ just to make a single book. And so for that, you've got to get, you know, a lot of money for them. And it's kind of a big outlay, in my opinion. But I mean, if the demand is there, you know, we'll see. Some people tend to like them, but typically your metal stuff, you're selling that to the really high rollers. So, I mean, you kind of have to know who your fan base is and would your fan base or a small percentage of it spring for metal. But I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it. I mean, if you got people that'll snap that up, I mean, definitely do it. I think we've been successful with the foils. They don't cost as much as the metals, obviously. So it's not as big of an outlay. I don't have to stock too many of them. And I think they come out looking just as good as metals do or at least pretty close. So that's my take on it.
Well, I saw somebody, one company actually offered a glass cover.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and believe me, there were very few of those, and they were expensive. And yeah,
not going to be doing that. I mean, can you imagine trying to ship something like that? I mean, I can see, man, if you're going to sell those at the shows, as soon as I hand it to you, you're now responsible for it, right? But I'm never going to hand a glass cover, even a metal one. Can you imagine the metal books being bent?
Oh.
Shipping. I mean, I'm talking about shipping. I mean, we ship a lot. So I've even had – I've seen you know, my buddies out there, the creators, they're launching on Kickstarter. There was one guy that did what was it? Shot glasses or beer glasses with his logo or the comic logo.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, every single one of them, right? I mean, you can imagine because you're shipping them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every one of them getting delivered broken. Good luck with that. Don't ever do glass.
No, nothing
ever if you're going to ship it anyway.
Yeah, because boy, ooh, man, that was a mess. But it's interesting to see. But, you know, it's a wonderful thing to look at, but I'm not convinced that I really want to buy a glass cover. I haven't seen any of those.
Or even just transporting it to the – I'm just thinking about it now. I'd have to transport it to the conventions, and even there, you know, if you have something heavy that falls on it, or, you know, what if somebody accidentally knocks it off your table, you know, or you're transporting it in your car and it flies off the seat or shifts in the trunk and breaks. I mean, you'd have to pack it like extra careful and we're not gonna go there.
Well, let's get to something more realistic. At the $1 level, you've got donate or build your own Astro book order.
Oh yeah, let's
talk about that a little bit, because it's for $1 you can build your own, or is that the starting place?
Well, right, so that's the jumping off point. So so, you know, that $1 level. So let's talk about the first bit of it. So if you just want to make a donation to the campaign, but you don't want to pick a reward, I mean, some people, that's their thing. They just want to donate. They don't want anything in return for it. And I certainly appreciate that. I mean, let me just say that right away. All of us on Kickstarter, on these crowdfunding platforms, we appreciate the donations of any amount, even if it's just a dollar. But I mean, if you want to donate more than a dollar, you can certainly do that. There's a place to put in, you know, extra funds when you choose that dollar, and not to choose any other. What we're talking about, the custom orders, is the add-ons. That gets you access to the add-ons. You can add them on, but if you're just donating, you don't add anything on. But you can up the amount by adding additional funds, and that's a donation. So that's one way to use it. And then the other way to use it is, like I said, you pick it. So it's a $1 reward level. So it's charging you a dollar. That's your admission ticket into the add-ons. And then I've got everything in my Astro Vengeance 3 campaign and the previous campaigns, everything except for like the really special stuff, like the producer stuff and the the commission may even be in there. Art commission. I don't know if I get the art commission in there or not, but some of the higher level stuff, the high dollar stuff's not in there, but everything else is. I mean, in terms of like books and trading cards and all the special covers and all that stuff, that's all in there a la carte, meaning you can literally pick and choose which ones. So when it says build your own custom Astro order, it's just that. You pick the dollar, it charges you a buck, and that's your admission ticket to go into the add-ons, and you can literally just sit there and add anything you want in really any quantity. And of course, as you know, Wayne, when you're configuring these Kickstarters, you know, you don't have to put quantity limits, but you can. But I'm pretty liberal with my quantity limits, so you can. That's how, if you want to order more than one thing, if I want to order 10 or something, or for 5 or something, you can put those quantities in there, and then you can really, I mean, anything we've got listed as an add-on, you can literally build any order you want for any amount. So that's cool. Really powerful. I believe that's the first time we've ever had that. So,
oh, really? Okay.
See if anyone takes advantage of that.
That'll be interesting, because as it stands, and of course we're doing this early again, it is, I guess it keeps telling me what I did. It's just... You can, 2 items included plus optional add-ons.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, nobody's taking it, but we're early here. But by the time this posts, there'll be several people in there taking that. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be curious to see how that does over the campaign. I'll be interested to see.
Just adding extra flexibility for people that we haven't been able to offer in the past. But people like flexibility. So if you're missing like a middle issue or something, you don't need the first one. You don't need the third one because you can order the third one from the campaign. You can go in there and you can pick an issue too. And that's a capability that we haven't had for the previous campaigns, but this one has it. So you can add stuff you're missing, fill in the gaps, whatever. Order, like I said, multiples. If you're ordering for friends, you can go in there and order multiple copies as maybe gifts for your friends. Hint, 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 suggestion there. stuff like that. So yeah, we'll see. But it's an option I wanted people to have for this round, so we stuck it in there.
Well, the holiday season is coming.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a good time to get your order in. Now, again, once again, this is going to be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, October 12th at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. How is issue 3 coming along? Are you where are you in the process for issue 3?
We're still making the art. So, but you know, the Kickstarter is now going to run for the next month, and then we do an Indiegogo after that. So I fully expect that by the time the crowdfunding initiatives for issue 3 are over, the book will be done or close to done by then. And certainly at that point, you're hitting the holidays because it's going to be, I mean, I think the Indiegogo is scheduled to end just before Thanksgiving. So then you're into like the holidays. And of course, you know, no one's doing crowdfunding there.
Right.
But we will be working to wrap things up on the book. So I'm really hoping that, you know, again, depends on the holiday schedules of my creators, my team that I'm working with. But if we can wrap it up, you know, before the end of the year, I'd like to do that. If not, it will probably be early first quarter next year. And then we can look at, you know, it's in the Kickstarter page, but we're going to target digital delivery anyway, because it takes an extra month or two to do the print versions, because you got to do all the setup and then the printing. It depends on where you are in the queue, but we're looking to maybe deliver digital editions in the first quarter, and then crossing fingers that paper supplies are still there and we don't have any delays with that. We would then maybe a couple of months after that, be looking to send out the physical print copies.
Okay. So there's 5 issues in this, in Astro Vengeance.
Correct. Yeah, there will be 5 total when it's all done. So probably sometime maybe toward the middle to end of 2024, which is now next year, this is 2023. We would look to do a campaign crowdfunder for issue 4 and then maybe wrap it up, if not just right thereafter, maybe the crowdfunder for the final issue in the series would be sometime in 2025.
Very good. Okay, so it sounds like good things are happening and stuff.
That's the plan, anyway.
okay, so this is the 4th story. How about, have you got you must be thinking about the 5th story already. Do you have any plans for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've written most of it. I got to wrap that up. That's something I'm working on right now. You're always writing and refining the future books as you're producing the current ones. So we have got that in the pipeline, and then also working on an outline for the 6th Astral Adventure. So we definitely have a couple more coming, and I'm pretty excited about that because we get to go different places, have different dynamics, different character interactions. And as you said, you know, in your video review, that the characters have distinctive arcs, and that's one thing that we'll get to see is some of those character arcs, you know, play out. And it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be very exciting. And I think the fans are going to love it. And as I always tell you on these podcasts, Wayne, you know, if there's one thing I know about the Astro fans, it's that they're the best fan base in the world. And you know, I love them to death. And I'm glad they're here. And they've been extremely supportive. And like I said, Astro fans are the best. And they're just going to love this. So thanks to them as well.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward as well. And I think Astro Vengeance, issues 1-3, sci-fi action horror thriller on Kickstarter. Be sure to get there and support it. And I think you're going to really enjoy it. And if you're behind, you can always catch up very easily. So, Jay, keep up the wonderful stuff. I think Astro's got a long and great future in front of it.
Well, thanks, Wayne. I appreciate you having me on again, man. It's always a pleasure. I always feel special. It's like being on the Johnny Carson show, man. I love it. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. We'll do it again sometime soon.
Sounds good, man.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.